If you think about driving along, and you were taught in driver's ed about the blind spot where you couldn't see through a part of your car where there might be another car coming up. Blind spots are those parts of our lives or our attitudes or our value systems that prevent us from seeing through them to the people who have this disease. There are a number of those that we experience in our society depending on our own upbringing and backgrounds, so we're going to be looking at a number of those. To end up, because every time I present on AIDS, people's faces get progressively longer and more overwhelmed, and shoulders droop, and everybody gets sad or depressed or scared or angry or something, I'd like to spend a little time talking about some of the things we can do to combat the fears we're going to spend the bulk of the time talking about. So if that's reasonable, Robert is here. Thank God he's been waiting. What I'd like to show you today is a few minutes, not the entire videotape, a few minutes of a videotape done by the Archdiocese, the Catholic Church in Minneapolis, called Who's Behind the Mask? I think a mask is a wonderful metaphor for fears and blind spots. And it's really short vignettes of people with AIDS, people with ARC, and people who are doing caring, either in a volunteer or professional capacity, for people with HIV infection. So we're going to start by watching that initially, and then we'll have some discussion. You're on.
So my sense is that for me this is like an onion. There's a layer right now on the surface, and in another week they'll be another layer, and probably this time next year I'll still be peeling away at all the things that he's taught me.
My name is Jim, and I'm in the 36.5-year-old age patient. A good example of myself being afraid of either touching me or anything to touch me is when I was up in northern Minnesota at my parents' summer home for a weekend, and I was sitting at the kitchen table eating, and some friends of theirs had stopped by. I was very afraid to approach them, or I didn't know if they wanted to approach me, so I kept my head down until they came over closer. I kind of held back, but Doreen had given me a hug, and Doreen's husband had shaken my hand. I had not thought her that they would. I thought they would just say hi, but I guess they're educated enough to know that there's no problem now. I feel very aware, though, when I'm out there with people around me in general, whether they want to shake my hand or not. I usually see if they put their hand out first before I will put my hand out. And that's with people that I know that know me and my situation. Well, I've been very fortunate to have a loving family. A lot of people, a lot of folks affected with AIDS have been abandoned or left alone. And I was very lucky to have my family. My two sisters and mom and nieces and in-laws, of course. They've been there throughout my whole diagnosis and my illnesses in the hospital stay. And it's meant a great deal for me. I don't think I'd be around today if it hadn't been for their support and love.
I guess I feel hard to get over in the sense of loss that I feel. I mean, I just feel a lot of days like it feels like someone sort of cut the heart right out of me. And there's a lot of days when it doesn't feel like it's really very worthwhile to go on. But there's another side to that too, and that's something that I think really kept me going and helped me to be able to continue to struggle from day to day, and that's the spirituality that I carry. And I think if I didn't have that kind of grounding, that spiritual grounding, I don't know how I would make it, actually, how I would survive.
The spirit of togetherness, the spirit of hope, a surprising thing for people to hear about AIDS. Maybe not hope that there is going to be a cure for them, but hope that they've found what's really important in their life. Hope that they've found maybe their God in a new way. Maybe that they've found friends and loving relationships that they never have experienced to that depth before.
These people are very special people. You really become involved in their whole story, because while they may have a very life-threatening illness, there's more to them than having the AIDS virus. There's the whole part of them emotionally, spiritually, socially, what they love, the families that they are a part of. And they're people like you and I.
None of us know that we're going to have tomorrow. I guess one of the things I learned from Dave was that life is fragile. And there are so many things that we want to do, and so many things we want to say, and so many emotions we want to share. And we should do it. We shouldn't wait.
A lot of times people are saying, well, what can I can't do anything, or it seems such an overwhelming task that there's a tendency to think, well, it's just a drop in the bucket, what can anybody do, and you sort of forget about it. And I think there are just lots of things, and one of them is that sense of compassion and expressing the compassion that a lot of people have, and make their attitude known, to help people about.
I would probably, first of all, acknowledge that to be fearful is not unusual, that many people react this way. It's our own need to learn more about this illness that will only help us break through this fear. But that is an initial reaction, and it's actually, for many people, a form of denial, and not everybody chooses to move on from that. I'd like to add one thing, and that is, I think as a church and as a community, we have a responsibility to be supportive and compassionate to those people who are ill, as well as we have a responsibility to minister to them as well as their families.
I think the AIDS virus gets deep down into our subconscious because it starts to trigger nerves of fear, because we're dealing with the unknown. None of us likes to deal with that. We like things clear, in the open. And the AIDS virus, because of the lack of knowledge and because of society's stigma on diseases, particularly those that deal with sexuality, that virus goes deep into the shadows of our mind, and it's a frightening thing to deal with. All the more reason why the church could be a leader in this, to bring it out into the open, to put it under the light, and to say we can deal with it. We can deal with it openly and justly and compassionately.
We all live with the issue of AIDS, whether or not we are personally affected. I don't know anyone
personally who had AIDS. But that doesn't mean that I am not worried about it, that I don't think about it, I don't have compassion for the people who are affected, that I will cry when I come across someone who has been affected with that.
I have a substantial philosophical or theological belief that everyone's pain diminishes me, and so that to the extent that I am able, I have to reach out to anyone in pain, and believe that among all of the people suffering today, none suffer more than those who contract and die from AIDS, and those who love them.
One thing I could offer to you, if you're having a hard time identifying with this issue, is to spend a day with someone who works with people with AIDS all day long. I think that experience would open your eyes to the reality of how this problem really affects people in a deep and personal way. And that while this person is losing control over their body around a virus that's sort of taken over their body, they are losing control in many other ways, and one of that is around being respected as a human being, being cared about as a person.
People that choose to avoid the issue are like cranes that bury their heads in the sand. But you can't bury your head. Burying your head doesn't solve anything. And if you feel that, well, it never will touch you, I thought I was invincible, and I was not. I had a wonderful career and life, and I thought everything was perfect. I had a very dear friend who contracted the virus through a blood transfusion when she was 16 years old. It didn't hit till 5 years later when she had been married for 2 years. She was very active in sports and very much in love with her husband. And at 22 years old, she died. And it can happen to anyone.
Well, it's unfortunate that this disease is still so prevalent in the homosexual society, because that ends up giving a lot of people a definite reason, a justifiable to themselves reason, to keep away from it. They feel it is a justified punishment for people's lifestyle choices. And unfortunately, we've taken so much time and energy to put forth into that belief that we've forgotten these are human beings, regardless of their choices. They're human beings who need compassion. We grew up as loving children. Whatever we took on as far as prejudices, angers, or hatreds, you know, that's something we developed within ourselves as we moved on into adulthood. If we step back for just a moment and say, what if it were me? What would I need? It would be a lot easier for us to give. Take the mask off for just a moment and think about if it were me, what I would need, and then take as little of that as you can to keep your own comfort, but at least give something.
AIDS is not here to baffle medical technology. It's not here to challenge our moral and religious fiber and our sexual mores. AIDS is here to teach us how to be with one another and how to love.
Thank you.
who's behind the mask. That was done by the Archdiocese of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Any reactions? Comments first? What are some of the fears touched on in the video? Didn't they touch on any?
Touching.
Isolation of a person that has a problem. The fear of being isolated.
It's important to talk about the fear for people with the illness besides what's also about loss of touch. It's a deep fear on the part of many of them. What else?
Rejection.
Rejection is a big one. Almost with the lack of respect for you as a human being. A treatment as an oddity or a maybe at best a scientific anomaly, and at worst somebody worth allowing to die. Perhaps. What else? Loss of a job, a career. Which we know equals self-respect and self-worth in our society. What we do.
There are many ways to contract AIDS, but the big fear seems to be if you have it, your behavior is called into question. You might be accused of being something that you're not.
Judgment of behavior.
Death.
These are all pretty. These are fears. That's a big fear. How about young death? Untimely death. Babies dying. Adolescents dying. Young adults dying. People dying before they're 80, 85, 90, or 100 years old. I don't think enough can be said about that fear on the part of all of us with AIDS or any other disease, that one of the reasons we don't want to face people who are suffering from any illness that's life-threatening like AIDS is it makes us realize any of us tomorrow could die. All of us will die. And those two realizations are difficult for us to swallow, I think, in our culture, in our period of life we live in. Thank you for saying one of the bigger fears. What else is a big one with this disease?
Fear of contact, because they're contracting it yourself.
Also, maybe on the part of somebody who has it, the fear that you may have given it to somebody else inadvertently along the way. Maybe some guilt associated with that.
The fear of living with it or the fear of not dying is from the person who AIDS. Fear of the pain you will go through back and forth to the hospital.
Yep. For people with it, fear of the future is very deep. Particularly since many folks with AIDS who are adults have seen many other folks with AIDS die of it. And they know what they went through. So they have some picture. Certainly our media has given us big pictures of what it's like. The other is the fear of just what they're going to run into every day in life. Fear of the future for those of us who don't have it, especially healthcare workers, when I do discussions with healthcare workers, people who say, I really like this work and I really feel committed to it, but I really am afraid of what the virus is going to do tomorrow. Or I'm afraid of what we're going to find out in 10 years about this that we don't know right now. And And that's a very clear spoken fear of many healthcare workers. Doesn't mean they won't do it, because healthcare, when we go into it, we know there's some risk involved. But many of them talk about not knowing because of the illness and the virus and information changes so frequently. Yeah.
There's one thing we don't have to say, and that's the financial cost of the dollars presented on one part, or the money that it takes, and then there's fear that there won't be enough on the other side. Many areas of
fear of the economic burden, yeah. Heard some estimates, although when I really tracked down how they made the estimates, it's an embarrassment in our country how little is really known about the costs of AIDS, actually, or any health care at all. But some estimates from about 2-3 years back say in San Francisco, or in California, actually, the whole state, one person with AIDS costs about $50,000 a year to care for. In New York City, it's about $150,000 a year. Minnesota, it's somewhere in between. Well, those estimates are real, real, real rough because we don't do a good job anywhere of tracking health care costs. That's part of the problem economically in this country. But it does show that it's an expensive illness.
Is $500,000 till death?
$500,000 till death? I wouldn't be surprised. As they're living longer, particularly, which they are. How about some more fears of us, those of us who don't have it? Not focusing on the people with AIDS at this point, but some of us.
Fear?
Yeah.
I know I have a fear of showing support if I don't know the person, if I suspect the person might have AIDS, or not even knowing if they're gay or not, but I had a friend who got really sick, and but I wasn't sure if he was gay, and it was really a really frustrating experience for me. I didn't know how to confront him or to show support or compassion. I had all those things, but I didn't want to offend him either at the same time.
Fear of not knowing how to be or what to say? Thank you for the other big one. Well, it takes a long time for those of us to get around to it. It's actually, in my opinion, Hannah, a bigger fear too, and that is of sexuality in general, homosexuality in particular, and sexually trans.
Actually, tying up those two, the sexuality, homosexuality, and death in one package.
Yeah. That's right. Sexually transmitted disease has never been so overwhelming in that this sexually transmitted disease can easily result in death. So that's a big one. Yeah.
Isn't that a recapturing of what an STD used to be, though? Before penicillin.
Sure. Used to kill.
It used to kill, too. I guess I worry about not my own chances of contracting the disease myself, but I worry about my kids, and it calls into question for me, what am I going to say to my children about sexuality, about adolescent sexuality, and I'm getting real conservative about that.
Yeah, how to teach kids what to say to them. I like to sort of put this fear about sexuality and homosexuality into a bigger context, which is a fear of differentness. So I think we grow up with anybody who's different, looks different, acts different, talks different than me. We have to have some sort of reaction to those people. I heard somebody put it into context of three possible reactions. One is we can ignore them. Do we absolutely have to face them? Two is we can try to change them and make them like us. Witness the efforts to counsel homosexuals to become heterosexuals. It's historically happened. Or a lot of the efforts to rehabilitate IV drug users. The third option is to get rid of them. We can't deal with differentness. We don't want it around. That's the most dangerous, in my opinion. But that's the big fear. Most of the people right now with AIDS in our country are different from most of us in this room. Quite different. And I think that's a major fear on the part of people doing the care for these folks and the rest of us in the population. I want to tell kind of a funny story of one of my other fears. Fortunately, I'm engaged to be married in the fall. But prior to meeting Peter again, I've known him for a long time. When I was dating, I was hesitant to tell people that I went out with what I do for a living. So depending on what kind of attitude I got in the initial conversations around dinner or lunch, I'd say, well, I'm a social worker. That's hard enough to explain. People think I worked with folks with welfare, that's it. Or else I'd put old people in nursing homes. Well, then if they said, social work, well, that's real interesting. Well, where do you do it? You know, then I'd say, a hospital. Yeah. And then if they really cared or wanted to know, they'd say, what kind of people do you work with? And then I'd tell them. Well, on two occasions, people never called back again, and I'm convinced by their facial expression that it was as soon as I said I worked with people with AIDS, they said, interesting. Didn't call me again. That's funny for me now because I'm getting married. It wasn't so funny then. And the worst part about that is when I did support groups for nurses in our hospital working with people with AIDS, many of them came tearfully to group frequently saying, my husband will not let me talk about my work at home. My father said he will cut off support if I continue to do this job. My boyfriend says I have to quit and go into another kind of nursing. There's a tremendous amount of rejection and isolation on the part of people who do this work. It's a big fear for those folks. You can't afford not to have the people of goodwill doing it, who are doing it. Well, that was it. Another big one. Let's see what was my other big
one. Yep. Can I add one more?
Uh-huh.
We need to add education or some kind of control in the drug culture because the lifestyle of homosexual, that's supposed to come out is only 4.1% in the age, but the big increase today is in drug culture. And that's the area that we have.
That's right. In pre-AIDS, how many people really wanted to work with IV drug users? Very many. It's a tough, tough, tough population to work with. Yeah?
I mean, I can see the Bible told me the good people were supposed to have nothing to do with sinners. That is connected to homophobia because of religious arrogance.
I'd call that a blind spot, most definitely. And I would talk about what we believe about disease resulting from sin. Are these people sick because of being sinners? And is that true for any disease? That tends to be a real blind spot on the part of many of us. Another big one for me was a fear of guilt by association. In no other part of my practice in 10 years of social work did I have anybody ask me if I was lesbian until I started working with people with AIDS. That was a tough question. I don't know how many of you would answer calmly and without batting an eye about your sexual preference, but it's really nobody's business. But I had a lot of friends and acquaintances and strangers and patients and family members ask me my sexual preference. And that made me a little nervous. That made me really look at my own issues about my sexuality and my homophobia and all of that. So that was a big fear, and I think that's true for a lot of people working in the field. Historically, thankfully, the gay community has organized themselves very well in most parts of the country to form associations, be they well-organized or grassroots organized, to help each other. So that many of the initial caregivers of people with AIDS in the gay community were gay people themselves. And many people who care for the people with AIDS who are intravenous drug users or hemophiliacs or anybody else might be people from the gay and lesbian community. So that's another sort of spoken or unspoken fear.
I think there are a lot of people single males and daughters who have this fear of being
thought of as being lesbian or gay just because they are not married.
And 30 years old, God forbid.
Right. And living with another girl.
Living with another
girl. Living with another girl. And you know how economically now it's hardly feasible to live in a large city by yourself if you are single. So you find a girlfriend, you find a friend to share the apartment with. But you soon have that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's pretty prevalent. Any other fears, blind spots that come up for you? I'll share with you my very biggest one. And I confess I stole it from C. Everett Koop, who turned out to be an unpredictable hero in many ways about AIDS in this country. He took some very strong stances as part of the Reagan administration, stronger than I think he was expected to take. Did you all get something in the mail from him about 2 years ago? First time ever in the history of the country, you know, that there was a direct mailing from the Surgeon General. Who ever heard of the Surgeon General except for cigarette package notices? In that packet, I'm sure you all can recall it word by word, but he made some statement. It was either in the foreword or the final conclusion that said his biggest fear about this epidemic is that it would cut into and ruin the very fabric of our society, that it would cut out our humanitarian care for each other, and that it would destroy the intimacy we have as human beings. And that, you know, I have a lot of fears in life. I tell people I fear nuclear war more than I fear getting AIDS. And I fear a traffic accident, which I'm much more likely to die of than AIDS. But I think that I fear what's going to happen to our society because of AIDS if we don't pay attention to what it's doing to our human relationships. So really, I sort of put myself on the line saying that, but it's an extremely deep held fear for me.
You mentioned that in your other class, that the majority of education divides us already by race. And it seems to be already happening, so it's been writing about it especially. You see the tensions coming out in AIDS is going to be an issue that divides us first.
Whether it's racism or homophobia or the well against the sick or the rich against the poor in this epidemic also. Old against the young. Okay, let's spend a little time talking about what we can do about it. So we have all these fears. Fears are contagious. Everybody gets worried, and then everybody else gets worried, and then we all get worried, and then we're... Well, I do have a belief that confidence and comfort are also contagious, and that's what we need to be working towards, is a little more confidence and sort of control of this big out-of-control epidemic. Many of us feel out of control of it at times. So what are some of the things we can do that can address the fears? I'll list them. You tell me. I'm good on the board. There's one obvious one. You're all sitting here.
Yeah, being important. Education.
Education. What I would say about education is that we need to make sure it's frequent. And not once every 2-3 years, not even once a year with this virus. It changes a lot. It's important for those of us who can read and understand to look for sources of information that are accurate, to not only read the Minneapolis Star and Tribune about AIDS. That's not the only place to look. It really is critical that we educate ourselves. Because that way we know what we're talking about. We can dispel a lot of myths and a lot of fears about having AIDS. Yeah.
What if you need more positive education, too, where it's not on a negative basis, it's not so heavy.
It's not fear-based.
It's not a fear education.
Yeah. I write sort of crooked when I... Well, I'm just practicing to get samples. Yeah, that's a very good point.
Also, we could just talk about fears, to bring them out into the open. There's so much about AIDS that's done in secrecy.
Acknowledge our fears. Don't they say that acknowledging our ignorance or our fear is the first step towards overcoming it. Publicly saying, you know, I'm really nervous about what I'm going to say to my kids. Or I really don't know what to say to my friend who I think might have AIDS, but I'm not sure. Saying it is the first step. So what do we do after that?
I think you have to take risks in business. Like business leaders will have to take a risk, and especially as an optician, and you know, person who's like, well, you know, just hypothetically, you know, we lose our business if some people came in and invested in their glasses and knew somebody would pay to work there, and not only you know in restaurants and healthcare and all that kind of things. I think business leaders are really going to have to not take risks, but just take, yeah, they're just going to have to overcome their fears.
And there are levels of risk.
Yeah.
I mean, same for the people with the disease. I talk with them all the time about the risk of telling people. Mm-hmm. They should only do it when they're ready to do it and have the supports in hand to help them get through it. Same with my risk of telling a person I was on a blind date with what I do. It's an opportunity to educate somebody. I'm not sure I want to spend my social time educating somebody, but
yeah,
that would have been a risk, and it was twice.
It's in your magazine, they have a list of all the others. It just rated all the nonprofit organizations in this last issue. And one of the questions they asked was, would you hire someone with AIDS? And most of them said there was no comment.
That's illegal not to in this country, but that doesn't mean people not to. Yeah.
I think we should limit that to the extent that it involves people to take risks and sexuality because.
Indeed. Yeah, we're not talking about sexual risks here.
Okay.
Right. Risks with these other fears, not related to how we get the virus. And we're staying on that level for this conversation. But you're right. Good point.
We knew of a family where it had struck in our client, we called them, and it was a risk as far as we could. And they very frankly said, do not want to talk about it to anybody.
So you risked some rejection there of your nature of care. Yeah. That's real hard to take when you finally get up the gumption. Yeah, it's happened to me a lot. Walk into a room, I'm going to save this person's life, you know, tell them about all the resources and what we can do and counseling, and they say, get me.
Personal risk of just being a friend, regardless of what their disease is or is not, and what their sexuality is or is not. If you see someone suffering, even if it looks like AIDS, you shouldn't let that change your perspective on that person. They are still your friend or the person in your community or in your congregation, and you should just reach out and touch them for their suffering, right?
What else?
On a larger scale, isn't it important that some economic screws are going to have to be put on the medical research field? Because aren't they not sharing data and sharing information, so no progress being made for the sake of profit?
This is probably the most highly politicized disease we've ever had in this country. If cancer sort of pales in comparison, and I used to grow up sort of jokingly saying, why should there be a cure for cancer? All those researchers would be out of a job, without knowing what I was really saying. And now I have a much better sense of what we're really saying. That's a very good point. Who should put the screws on? I don't know if that's a federal government thing or if it's a public outcry or who it is, but he's right, he makes a good point. Is that what you're essentially talking about, the political?
Well, the medical field, I think, is extremely guilty of perpetuating this disease.
But most of the money is going to research there. Plus,
yeah, but you'd be amazed. Who controls the government funds and costs? aren't controlled, and some of the answers are being bought. Just an example of that is the lawsuit between France and the U.S. about who really discovered HIV first. The governments are suing each other. It took almost a year for the research from France to be published because there were threats from the U.S. that they better not publish it before we published ours. And they finally agreed to call Robert Gallo of the U.S. National Institute of Health and Luc Montagnier, I don't know how to say his name, of the Pasteur Institute of Paris to be co-discoverers of the virus. But meanwhile, we lost about an 18-month period of the public knowing that that much advance had been made.
The same is true in, like you were mentioning, in cancer research. It's not a tremendously unified program. There's two or three different schools of thought, and they really are pretty well scattered if you've ever been really closely associated with them.
Yeah, they fight each other a lot, especially the federal government institutions, the NIH, National Institute of Health, Center for Disease Control, National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases. They're all working hard on AIDS. They're probably all working hard on cancers, and they don't like each other. And if one leaves to go work at the other, they lose all their friends. It's amazing. Well, it's not amazing. It's human nature. Yeah.
It seems to me that this will force a reform in insurance and in the things we were talking about, ethical decisions. You know, how do you make decisions about when to start and stop care? That sort of thing. That will force that kind of thing. It seems to me that one Christian response is to create the public will to be intentional about that, so that we're not just caught floating in the crisis, but that we are making decisions about what is smart policy.
Yeah, that sort of ties in with the forum we had the other night of where the church fits into the public policy debate about AIDS and whether we should fit in, who should do the fitting in. Well, what is something each one of us could do that Michael Pellet would be happy we would do about AIDS? Pray. Funny, I talk to church groups and we get into all this good discussion about all our options for what we can do, and no one says pray until I do. I don't take it lightly. I take it very, very, very seriously.
The problem is that the church and our preaching seems to be
that succinctly, then, I don't know what you said. Love one another. My life is most important to me. One thing I'd say as a social worker is important to do, and this is what I talk about with anybody who's working in the field, is to seek professional support for this kind of work. I've already talked about how a lot of nurses I've talked with, and myself included, as a social worker, had a hard time getting personal support sometimes in my life. In my life it's less, how can you work with people with AIDS? And how can you stand to see people dying? How can you stand to work with mothers who cry in your office? How can you stand to see families work to reunite after years of separation? How can you stand to deal with the ethical dilemma of suicide and AIDS every month? So until I talk with people who do the same kind of thing, it's hard for me to keep going with it. So I encourage people to get support. If it means seeing a therapist, a counselor for a while, certainly I encourage people to do that. It's important to do. Anything else? Yeah.
I've been struck by the fact that even in my little town of Westby, Wisconsin, in the last year we have had workshops for nurses, for funeral directors, for other health professionals on AIDS, but almost every workshop focuses on how not to get it. And I hear very little training or some kind of way to help us, who are those of us who are caregivers professionally oriented in our lives, how to help us embrace. They're teaching us how to push people away. They're not teaching us how to embrace. And I think that we need to do that. The church needs to do that. Other groups, professional groups, need to do that.
Dan's point exactly, I think. Most of the money in this country put into AIDS is either research or, in the bulk, education for the rest of us so we don't get it, which is a reasonable thing to fund, but it certainly hasn't helped many of us examine our own values and beliefs about it, and it hasn't done a lot to provide the care needed for folks either.
Or within the church context, too, just the whole notion church per se, the attitude and the policy of the whole business that the church has for people who are dealing with AIDS or all the issues around AIDS, homosexuality or whatever, sometimes find that the church community is the most judgmental.
It's the last place. Pastors is a big one. Pastors and church workers. One of the most powerful tools we have for that is to give pastors who've had AIDS in the congregation talking to other pastors. In Minneapolis, we've had some amazing examples of long-time, old-time ALC, small, mostly elderly, inner-city church. As a son of the church with AIDS, who came and told the pastor, and the pastor, of course, just never thought this would enter his realm of professional practice. And he's a powerful witness to what we need to know in the church.
Does our church have AIDS on this time?
I'm not aware of videos by Lutheran Church, but there are lots of resources that I don't know what we call it in the ELCA now, Officers Church and Societies. LB? Yeah. I have a listing of a lot of resources that I'm going to give out in the last session on Saturday. Worship resources and church study resources from all over. Lots of church denominations have done a lot. Lutherans have not done badly, but we haven't done as well as a lot of denominations on education. Just to end this, I want to say that it's important, it's been very important for me as a human being to look at my own development and maturation that has been directly a result of having to do the kind of self-analysis, the examination of my own fears, my own biases, my own faith, my own doubts that I've had to do over the past 4 years. And when people ask me why I would want to do that work, and what's the reward in it? That's what I always say. The reward is intensely personal. It's intensely related to community, because I know much better what I'm about in this world and what kind of person I want to be based on who I've worked with in this kind of setting. So that's what I would encourage us all to do, whether we ever know somebody personally with AIDS, that we still think about, be aware of, reflect on, and deeply look at our own issues and attitudes around AIDS, because it can only be helpful in our professional and personal and faith world. Yeah.
It is very difficult to turn my attention. because though they had AIDS. And I'm wondering how maybe it's a good practice. I mean, I don't know.
Well, yeah, I think what you mean is you treat everybody as though they're potentially infectious. That's different than having AIDS, isn't it? Potentially infectious, I mean, any of us could have other infections. Hepatitis. Well, that's what the universal precautions are in hospitals, though.
Oh,
and they came about because of AIDS.
To that extent.
Yeah, yeah.
But as far as we're concerned, of course, it's just many. The public is concerned about, but there are many things that I think, well, do you want to talk to my children? You know, there are some things I really need to tell them, and I need to, you know, it's very difficult to not think of everybody as being potentially having something. You know, it really is.
We all potentially do have something. We all potentially have something that'll kill us sometime, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah. True. That does not mean, however, and my point is that we shouldn't hug each other and continue to be affectionate and build our intimacy, and that's, again, my big fear. Anything else? Final anything? Pardon me? Peace of the Lord.
Go in peace, serve the Lord.
including those with AIDS. Well, thank you for coming.